Welcome to Coaching Culture, the podcast where we discuss how we can use sports and not let them use us. I'm JP Nurbin, the founder of Thrive On Challenge, and the mission for this podcast is to connect leaders in athletics to help us create a transformational culture by building leadership and character. Now let's get started. Hi, welcome to episode 49 of Coaching Culture, Clarifying Your Purpose. I'm your co-host, JP Nurbin. Today, myself and co-host Nate Sanderson are going to dive into our why, our purpose when it comes to coaching. In the first part, Nate and I are going to share some stories about how we came to discover our why in the face of some really tough circumstances. And at the end of this podcast, we're going to give you three short activities you can do yourself or with your staff to clarify your purpose. Now, Nate does an amazing job presenting so many ideas in here. So I'm sure you're going to walk away with something that not only can impact your coaching, but it's going to impact another person's coaching. So let's get started.
All right, JP. Well, you and I have been around coaching culture here for quite a while now at this point. We've read a lot of books. We've had a lot of conversations with coaches and lots of people outside of the coaching industry. And every time the subject of culture comes up, the same question begins that conversation, and that is, what is your why, right? Every time we have conversations with people about building culture, it seems to start with that question. Now, the one thing I want to ask you to get our conversation going here today is, in my experience, and I think it's probably similar for you, that wasn't a holy moment, you know, where we sit in a closet, a dark closet with a candle and spend some intentional time thinking about, why am I a coach? Oftentimes, we're confronted with that question based on circumstances that aren't always great, where maybe we're not winning or maybe something has happened that's been a negative experience for our players in our program, and we're faced with this confrontation of, what more is there, right? What else am I doing as a coach, and what impact am I really having? And I know you've got a great story in your coaching background that kind of put you in a place where you started thinking about that for the first time. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
So Nate, for me, I kind of just wandered into coaching. You know, I had moved to Ireland after I'd finished playing at the University of South Carolina, basketball there, and I was living in Ireland, which is a whole other strange story for a different day. And I had this weird impulse to just walk into this sports facility and ask if they needed basketball coaches there. And that was kind of like why I started coaching. It's just, I had this like, I got some free time and that might be fun and might make a bit of difference, right? I never thought this would be a career. In fact, I was studying law at the time. I was in law school. And within like a few months, I had like started coaching like three different teams, dropped out of law school to start a degree in PE teaching and English teaching, like, because I fell in love with it, right? So, but I never really intentionally thought about like, why am I doing this, right? It's just like this passion, this love. And I think that's how most of us stumble into it, because we love our sport, we love sport, or we love teaching or coaching, that type of thing. We enjoy that a lot. And so that was kind of why, how I stumbled into it. And I think that the fact that I didn't have a very great clarity in my why, into my purpose, posed some issues later on down the line. For instance, like 6 years later, I'd go move to Tennessee, and I was coaching in Tennessee at a high school there. I think my why started to change, whether I realized it or would admit it or not, right? Like I was coaching for the validation. I was coaching because this was my profession, and because people really, especially my time in Ireland, started to identify me as like this basketball coach, and very good basketball coach in many people's eyes, that had achieved a lot of success, a lot of wins. This job brought me across the Atlantic Ocean, and so I had a win game, right? So coaching, my why, wasn't so much about making an impact as it was winning games and certain different outcomes, which then started to become problematic a few years down the line as I got in there. And, you know, you talk about this transactional versus transformational coaching, and I started to become very transactional because I needed to achieve those outcomes, and it stopped being about the players. But it wasn't, and then I stumbled across Burn Your Goals, that book, and that was the first book that really started to ask me that question of like, why are you doing what you're doing? Whatever it is, Burn Your Goals is not just coaching, it's like your life's mission. Like, why are you here? And it's funny that I never really sat down and was intentional in thinking about that.
Well, that's interesting. I have a similar background in not starting in Ireland, but starting in coaching, kind of wandered into it. This will be my 17th year as a head basketball coach, and my first year, I started actually, my first contract was as an eighth grade girls basketball coach. And by the start of the season, I ended up flip-flopping contracts with the JV coach. And then midway through that season, our head coach resigned for doing some inappropriate things with players, and I became the interim coach for the rest of that season. And so I became the fifth coach in 4 years in that program. No coaching experience prior to that, other than I really liked basketball. I was really interested in basketball, and I really enjoyed teaching and being around, kids. And so, when we eventually talked the athletic director into letting me stay on as the full-time coach after that year, I was really presented with this question kind of at a ground level, where we're building this program from decimation. I mean, they were in a 33-game losing streak, and the last couple of coaches had been dismissed for doing stuff they shouldn't have been doing. And so here we are, the basketball thing was kind of the last thing we talked about in the interview. And it was really
Yeah.
more about what impacts are we able to have on the lives of kids? Because what was happening was certainly not positive. Obviously the experience that kids and families were having tied to this basketball program was incredibly negative over the last couple of years. And so, the things that I really started with, my first sort of thought about mission and why was, first of all, we wanted this program, like they needed a head coach that was going to care more about kids than they did themselves. Because the coaches before me were, in a lot of ways, they were selfish, where they're trying to meet their own needs or their own desires or whatever it might be by using kids. And that had laid waste, right, to the amount of trust in the program. And so from the beginning, we needed to have integrity, and we needed to establish, safe and meaningful connections with kids and with families. And our program had to be about something bigger than basketball, because basketball, obviously, at that point, wasn't enough to sustain anything. I mean, not just because the basketball product wasn't very good, but it doesn't matter how good you are if you're having that kind of an impact, that kind of a negative experience is what your players and the people that are in your program are experiencing. And so that's really where we started. We told the AD and I told the kids that regardless of what happens with this losing streak and how, the product on the floor, we want this to feel like a family. And so over the course of my career, 16, 17 years later, as I look back on that was really the foundation. I didn't really think about it at the time of why am I coaching, but those circumstances sort of forced me into that place of trying to figure out, what is the impact and what experience are our players having as being part of this program?
Do you think, though, for a coach that's starting out with a new program, starting out in coaching, though, that it's harder to walk in and have a transformational purpose, a purpose that's about greater than yourself, about serving the people around you, to a program that's been losing, gone through maybe even something as horrible as what your program had gone through, or somebody that's been like part of a winning program, they've replacing a coach that's had this long tradition of success, or maybe they've had average success, but people are hoping this is going to turn the tide, right? Like, what do you think is more challenging? Do you think that was actually a positive for you that you walked into a program that was decimated, in your words?
Well, I think it can go both ways. It depends a little bit on the how you're coming into that program. I mean, if you're following a program that's fairly well established and it's built on, a strong foundation, and you're looking to continue that, and that's led to competitiveness, certainly there's going to be some expectations there. And in some ways, that's not unlike where I've started in my current job. I'm going into my second year here at Lynmar High School, and we're the fifth largest school in the state of Iowa, and there are definitely expectations that all of our programs are going to be competitive, and we're going to compete for conference championships and, make state tournament appearances and all those things. And I think given my background coming from Springville, where we had won a couple state championships, those expectations certainly preceded me a little bit. But again, now looking back at it, I came into that position, regardless of expectations, with a very clear purpose in mind, I guess it evolved over the course of my career. And I've coached, teams that have gone 0-18, and I've coached a couple state championship teams. And I think experiencing both ends of the spectrum, regardless of where you start, eventually you come to the same place of the things that you remember, the things that kids remember, the things that the state championship trophies and the trophy case resemble aren't being the best to me. And I don't think to the kids that have been on those teams, they remember bus rides and connections and relationships and, you know, the things that that's in a lot of ways validated them as people. Right. And I think that's what we're trying to do now, even starting in a program with a lot of expectations is, you know, we often say to our parents and we said this to our kids, our objective is to win games. Like we're going to prepare, we're going to lift, we're going to watch film, we're going to scout, you know, we're going to do all the things that can help us to try to win games. But that's not our purpose. You know, our purpose now, my purpose, I try to articulate very clearly to my staff and to our players and our coaches is this. Like when my players graduate after 4 years of playing for me, I want them to know three things, right? I want them to know that they were loved. I want them to know that their value does not come from what they can do with a ball. And I want them to know that they've been uniquely created to make a positive difference in the world. And we try to use basketball to teach those three things. I sort of crystallize this in my mind by, you know, telling people that I want to have a Han Solo moment with my player. And I don't want to spoil any movies out there, but if you watch to the end of The Empire Strikes Back, there's a moment where Han Solo, you know, the hero is being held captive by Darth Vader and they're going to throw him into this carbonite freezing chamber and he's going to be frozen solid. And the princess is being held guard on the side, you know, of the frame. And just before they throw him in, she yells out, "I love you." And Harrison Ford, in one of the most, the best improvised lines in Hollywood history, says, "I know." Right. And they cast him down in the thing and he gets frozen. And the story goes on from there. And, you know, when I watched that, I don't know, a few years ago, and I thought, you know, that's the moment that I want to have with my players before they're done. That, you know, when I'm with my seniors for the last time, whether it's at our banquet or it's at our last practice, whatever it might be after our last game, you know, I'm going to hopefully be to the point where I can tell them, "I've just appreciated being your coach and I love you." You know, and I don't need them to say back, "I love you too, coach." I don't, like, that's not what I need. What I hope that they'll say is, "I know." You know, that they would think back the way that we've coached them, the way that we've interacted with them, the way that we've invested in their lives. And they would think, of course, like, that's love. What that has been, I've been loved. And that they would say, "I know."
Yeah, right. I think that's, well, I like that story for, like, two reasons. And one is the first one you touched on, is that you don't need them to say, "I love you" back. And that's huge. I think I wanted that. I craved that as a coach early on. And I remember when I left Ireland, I had, and in this, you know, just even talking to you now, it makes quite an impact on me on this, because when I left Ireland after 5 years of coaching, you know, my players threw me this great big going away party, and with my friends and the families were there, and there's, you know, over 100 people there. And I literally had maybe about 25 to 30 players line up that I had coached over the last few years, and all giving me hugs and telling me how much they love me and stuff like that. And that impact was amazing. It was, but it was about me, right? Like, I had done the work and it was great. And I kept looking for that moment for the next few years in coaching. And when you look for that moment where they say, you know, "I love you," like, type of thing, it's like, it is about you then, right? Like, it's this validation type of thing. And you just want them to experience love. And they may not realize it in that moment. You know, they may not have that moment where they want to say, "I love you" back. But you may hear it. You may not. But that's not, like you said, that's not the reason why you do it. You don't do it for that. That's totally like selfless coaching, right? And I think that's huge.
And I think another thing that goes along with that in our, you know, our purpose is that I want them to know that they were loved. And I certainly try to approach our players, you know, with that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they were loved by me explicitly. You know, part of what we're trying to teach in our program is them to love one another, right? So they should know that they were loved by their teammates and by me. And, you know, does that make sense? Like, as being part of this program, it isn't, again, it sort of diffuses that a little bit, where it doesn't have to be, you know, well, they were loved because coach, you know, they felt like coach's favorite or something like that. It's just, when you were here, you're loved, you know. And I'll tell you another similar story to that. When I started last season as my first year at the school I'm at now at Lindmar, we still live in the Springville community, right? And so my daughter goes to Springville, and you know, a lot of my friends are still there, and I still, you know, am well connected to a lot of people in the community. And so it was really hard to leave and not leave, if that makes sense, you know, where we didn't move away from the community, but we're still seeing a lot of those people. And so I'm sitting in, you know, my office kind of in the middle of the year at Linmar, and thinking, you know, what is it that I miss most about coaching at Springville? And as I thought about it, you know, I thought, well, you know, we were more competitive, but that wasn't really it. I thought, well, our kids knew the system better. That was nice, but that's not really it. And, you know, I kept drilling down until I finally got to this point where I came to this realization that I just missed walking into the gym and knowing that I was loved, right? And because I'd invested so much in those players over such a long amount of time that they knew me and all my idiosyncrasies and all my weaknesses and all my bad jokes, and yet I was still accepted and I was still loved. And I just wasn't to that point yet in my new job, right? And so, you know, as I've reflected on that, again, it isn't really about me, but that's what I want my players to experience and to think when they walk into the gym, that regardless of what their role is, whether they start, whether they're varsity or whatever, you know, that this is a place where they feel like they're loved. That's what we're trying to create.
I love how you know your purpose so clearly in your mind. You know, we talk about this manifesto. I think it's, you know, some people, for me, I like to write things down. And you may have this written down in your coach's philosophy type of thing that you share with the parents. But I think, you know, we need to have it very clear in our mind. And it needs to be something simple that we can articulate to remind us in those moments that, you know, you talk about. You know, I love Bob Goff in his books. You know, we both read his books, Love Does and Everybody Always, and Love Does, he talks about how something very simple for him is just his mission statement, her purpose statement, is just be awesome, right? And I love that. You know, he makes the point that it's not something you put on the back of a shirt, but something you put on the inside of a shirt. Essentially, you don't kind of run around telling everybody type of thing. And I think that it's something, though, that when we articulate, whether it be on a piece of paper or in our mind and with different images of, you know, like you link with the Harrison Ford and Han Solo moment, that we can keep coming back to. And that's, I think, which is really critical, that we have that thing and that we've kind of thought that through.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, you know, for me, it's been a matter of capturing some of those things when they sneak up on you. You know, I'll give you another example of just a kind of a little phrase that really has grounded me at Linmar is, you know, again, just thinking about, well, what are we doing here? You know, we had left this program, we left this community, and now we're starting all over. And I remember just, you know, one night after another tough loss last year, I'm just sitting in my office, you know, sitting in the dark, right, just staring at the back of the wall and just thinking like, okay, what are we doing here? You know, we're not as competitive as we want to be or as what people want us to be, and we're kind of struggling to adapt to the new system and that kind of thing. And, you know, this phrase just sort of comes into my mind as I'm like, what am I doing here, right? And it's, you're here for these kids. You know, you're here for these kids, right? And that's just it's another way of saying the same things that I've already kind of articulated in terms of my purpose. But that little phrase, you know, encapsulates so much for me. You're here for these kids, right? And so that was incredibly, you know, I guess affirming for me. And that's something I really grabbed onto for the rest of the year and even now going into year two. Like, regardless of what happens on the floor, my purpose is be here for these kids.
And so that's your, and I actually, just talking to you, I used to always have mission statement. I like purpose. I think because mission statement's so overused by businesses and people throw it up on walls and on the back of shirts and all that, and it really doesn't do what it's intended, which is, I think the big thing here is it can have two really powerful things when you've been intentional, you've thought about it, is one you just shared there, which is in those moments of really hard times, in those moments of great struggle, you can come back to that statement. And it's like, and it's not about motivation, it's about recentering, refocusing yourself. Why am I here? Why am I here, right? I think that's huge. And I think the other thing is that it helps you to align this vision of why you're there, this purpose of why you're there, to the very small behaviors that you implement and train as a coach, to the strategies that you implement, the procedures upon which you build your program, within a personal within yourself, is why I think, you know, it's great to have a manifesto that's really focused on, you know, your mission as a coach, not so much on the team's mission or purpose. You know, what are you doing on a daily basis to become that coach, to fully actualize and live that mission out, that, or live your purpose? And it's, and so, yeah, it's be there for those kids. Well, there's certain things that you've got to do, and that's what we're going to talk about the next few episodes, is how do you start to get there to those things that start to train to be that best version of Nate Sanderson or JP Nurbin, who, you know, to be the best version of yourself so that you can really live that mission or live that purpose to its fullest extent. And I think that's the two big things, is for the moments of great struggle, but then also these moments of planning and preparing and training yourself as a coach.
Well, and I think the other thing I would challenge coaches with too, and this kind of thought comes from The Power of Moments that was came out earlier this year by the Heath brothers. And there's kind of the throwaway line early in that book about the difference between passion and purpose. You know, and I think I was just actually talking to one of my former point guards a little bit the other day about this. And she's in the middle of her college career, you know, and has just decided not to continue playing the college sport that she had been doing her first 2 years, because she wants to try to discover more about herself and pursue her passions and that kind of thing. And, you know, I challenged her a little bit. I said, Meg, it's great that you had the courage to make that decision. And I certainly have all the admiration in the world for, you know, trying to pursue this growth and this discovery, you know, path in her life and in her college career. But what I said to her is I want to encourage you to look past passion, because passion is really about you. You know, passion is rewarding and it's enticing and it can be exhilarating. And, you know, it's awesome when we do what we love to do. But finding purpose takes that a step further and asks the questions, how do I do that for others? Right? Purpose is about others and passion is about me. And those things aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. I mean, in my case, I'm incredibly passionate about coaching basketball. But even in that, I've found that there's something even bigger, right? And that is having a purpose where I'm trying to connect with our players or with our parents or with our community or what have you, where we're leveraging, right, that enjoyment of what I'm doing to benefit others. And I think what you and I have been talking about and what we're going to talk about in the coming weeks here is, how do we drill into not only being more intentional about and effective at doing what we're passionate at, but then how do we identify what our purpose is, what impact we're having on others, and then taking steps to ensure that that's happening in our coaching.
See, I love that, the difference between the passion and purpose, because for the years I was a really passionate coach, you know, really passionate, really about it. And I think people just identify passionate with a great coach, that he's a transformational coach, he cares about the kids, you know, that type of, just because that's our in our experience of coaching. And I think that we have to, like, start to reflect on our coaching behaviors and our coaching experiences in the past, our experiences of being coached, and our experiences of coaching, to really start to get into our why. And I kind of touched on this earlier, which is, my why for coaching wasn't just to serve others or to make a difference in people's lives. It wasn't that. It was serving myself, right? It was... And so I could show up to the gym every day because I was passionate about coaching. I was passionate about the sport. Had you asked me why I coached, I said, yeah, because I love the kids. You know, I'm here for the kids. But it really wasn't all the time. So you have a great activity that you did with your staff that I kind of do in a smaller way with coaches that I work with in a one-on-one mentorship capacity. Share that activity, actually, with the listeners.
Yeah, one of the things that's in Joe Ehrman's book, Inside Out Coaching, it really encourages the reader to walk through your coaching timeline. You know, oftentimes if we're not intentionally reflective about how we're coaching, we just tend to sort of default to coaching the way that we were coached, right? So if you're a basketball coach, you're likely to run a similar system as a coach as what you ran as a player. Maybe that's because you know it as well as anything else. But, you know, as a parent, we tend to parent the way we were parented, unless we pause and stop to think, well, is this how I want to respond in this situation? Is this what I want to teach my kid, and, you know, out of this lesson or what have you? And I think there's a lot of value in doing that as a coach as well. And so one of the activities we did a couple years ago before the season started, is I got all my coaches, middle school and high school coaches, together, and I asked them to do their coaching timeline before this meeting, right? So they were to go back to their earliest memories of playing organized sports and to start plotting kind of on a graph what their experience was like playing for the different coaches that they played for in any sport, not just in basketball, which is what we were coaching. And so kind of their instructions were, if it was a positive experience, you know, we put a line across the middle of just a blank white page. If it was a positive experience, they would, on the timeline, put that dot above the line. And if it was a negative experience, it would be below the line. And then how far away from the line sort of determined how positive or how negative that experience was. So as a staff, we all did that individually, and we brought that to this meeting. And one of the things that we did is we just picked a couple of the dots and sort of shared about what it was like to play for that coach. So that might have been a fourth grade, you know, city league soccer coach. It could have been an eighth grade middle school tennis coach. It could have been a varsity basketball coach. But just to try to reflect a little bit on some of the most memorable experiences that we had as players, and what it was like to play for those coaches, right? And that was really, I think, a meaningful experience for our staff for a couple of reasons. Because what we did after that was, I really challenged the coaches then to think about, if I were to do this with some of our future players, right, or our players after they'd graduated, and come back to them and say, okay, what was it like to play, you know, for Coach Hushock or for Coach Menster? Where would you graph them, and how would you describe what that experience was like? You know, I challenged my coaches, what would you want them to say? Where would you want your dot to be, and what would you want them to say about what it was like to coach for you? And for me, in that meeting, one of our assistants actually played for me for 4 years. And so it was a little bit of a vulnerable moment to kind of, you know, peek over the edge of the couch and look and see where Coach Pappas had put me as her varsity basketball coach for 4 years. You know, that became a very real moment for me. Here's one of my former players. What would she actually say about what that experience was like? Not even what I wanted it to be like, but what was it really like for her in that situation? And I think what we got out of that, I mean, as a staff, it was a great bonding experience, you know, to be able to share some of those, just those experiences and how they shaped us individually as coaches. But I think for a lot of the coaches on our staff, it was really the first time where anybody had asked them that question before. You know, what do you want it to be like for your players, the experience to be like for playing for you? And it became kind of the genesis of a great conversation that certainly lasted, you know, beyond just that meeting for us throughout that year.
I think that activity is just brilliant. And one of the things that is really scary about doing that activity is it puts you, like you said, you have to be incredibly vulnerable to reflect on, obviously not so much on reflecting on how your coaching experiences, but when you start to imagine how other players viewed you, right? I think that's huge. Even just doing the line of work that I'm doing and the stuff that I write about, it's great when the players reach out to me and are like, oh man, you know, how are you doing? You know, love playing for you. You know, it's good to hear from you. You know, or they'll just reach out to me and connect with me. And I was in Ireland recently, you know, got to see a few of my former players, and it was an incredible experience connecting with a few of those guys. But there's still this in my back of my mind often, which is this whole thing of like, I'm still half expecting a couple players to come out of the woodworks and go, how are you talking about this? You're a complete jerk, right? Because that was at times, right? Like, there's this whole part of me sometimes is fear when I started writing and started speaking about this type of stuff and sharing with people about my experience, where it's just like, you know, some people are going to call me a phony. Well, the reality is, like, I speak about this and I talk about this because I was very transactional for a very long time, right? I was very, very late in the game when I started to really clarify my why and start to align behaviors and procedures within our team and implement strategies that matched up with that why. And, so I think, as like, my encouraging thing for coaches is, this is a lot of these activities, when you start to ask this, is don't think that admitting that the way you have been doing things hasn't been the most beneficial, right? Like, when you admit that, like, okay, the way I've been doing things hasn't been the most beneficial, it's not saying that you were a bad coach. I think we all are doing the best we can with what we know and where we are. Nobody sat me down and did what you did with your coaches. Nobody ever did that. They said, here's a ball. Oh, you played in America. Here's a whistle. Good luck. And then within a couple months, I had 5 or 6 job offers, because they're like, he's American. Surely he knows about basketball. And I was running camps, and I was like the basketball guy in the city, you know, and I had a great positive impact in a lot of people's lives in that. But at the same time, I also can reflect on it and know that while some players would have me in the positive side of that timeline, I know there's some players that would put me down at the very, very, very bottom. And that's in the past, and now it's about moving forward. And that's why I think this process is so critical. It's reflect on it, but don't beat yourself up over it type of thing, you know?
Well, and I think part of it is just the intentionality of, you know, when I communicate some of this with our parents or with our players, like, I'm not there yet. You know, even in 17 years of trying to develop this and be more intentional about it, at the end of this past season, you know, there are emails coming in about, you know, just kids that didn't have a good experience playing in our program. And, you know, that feedback is important. And I, you know, will tell parents and I'll tell players that I'm not going to get it right all the time. And, you know, we kind of clung to this phrase last year a little bit in year one of we start with what we know and we grow from there. You know, and I think that that's so important, as you're saying, is, you know, you may be taking the first steps in trying to just identify your purpose. And it isn't about condemning yourself and where you've been. It's about, okay, well, this is new information or this is a new approach. So how do I grow from here? Right. And just starting to be intentional about that process.
Which is, you know, really what the next few episodes are going to be about is moving forward in that, moving forward to kind of identifying your values and different beliefs that you have about coaching and leadership, and then just to start to focus on the things that you do, your behaviors and strategies. I think there's just great benefit in having that mission or purpose statement. And I know you may not have it exactly written down, but you know, you talked about, I'm here for these kids. And it's something you're going to come back to. So it may be just something written in your mind type of thing, or it may be something that you do. And that's what, you know, for coaches after this episode, I'd encourage you to potentially do this with your staff, do the activity that Nate talked about, which is to sit down and to kind of go through that timeline and then ask yourself, where would your players put themselves on your timeline, on their timeline, and to kind of reflect on those type of things. I think there's great benefit in that. And then to really, to write something down, you know, and to really kind of put something on in one sentence, very simple, you know, that you can come back to. Like Nate's, I'm here for them, right? That's just huge. I think to be able to come back to that as you start to reflect and start to create the rest of this manifesto upon which, you know, your other behaviors that you can do to support that mission.
JP, the other thing I would suggest for coaches is that if you're not really sure what the experience is like to play for you, I'd encourage you to ask your players. And maybe you don't do that with a survey for everybody at the beginning, but maybe reach out to a couple players that you trust or players that you still have connections with and just ask them, what was it like to play for me? And even if you start with the players that are still talking to you and you have your best relationships with, what they're going to tell you is the best things about playing for you. And that's going to help to crystallize what's lasted for them. And you don't necessarily have to go and track down the kids, you know, hated your guts or the ones that, you know, are going to put you on the lowest possible point on the page, but even starting with players that you know and that you trust, because it's going to tell you the impact that you've had on their life, right? And then the focus becomes, how do I do that for more of my players?
If you enjoyed what you heard today, be sure and go to thriveonchallenge.com and subscribe to my weekly newsletter, because not only will you get the coaching notes as a downloadable PDF every week, but you will get other resources that are going to help you build your culture. Also, if you'd like to support this podcast, the best way to do that is to share with a coach or coaches who might find one of these episodes beneficial, and also share on social media. Thanks again for listening in to the Coaching Culture Podcast. Just a quick correction. Last week, I gave out Nate Sanderson's email and Twitter handle, but it was incorrect. His Twitter handle is @CoachNSanderson, and his email is Nate_S@breakthroughbasketball.com.